I'm happy to take over if you take over the doorbell, Lisa. Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is faring well during these times. So I guess we just wanted to kind of get together and talk about re-entry, reopening, what that looks like. I know many of us were on the webinar that was hosted a couple of weeks ago now. I think we're all losing time. I found it was very interesting and helpful. I would offer to share what we are working on for my program. It is very specific to my program, but I'm hoping that maybe just sharing how our thought process and what we did can help others and provide, you know, a jumping off point for conversation. So I'll just tell you briefly about our program here at JFS Houston and what we're thinking. And I can do a little share screen to just show you what our phased reentry looks like. So Celebration Company is our employment program for adults that have an intellectual disability. It's a supportive and transitional employment program. So they do come to JFS to meet, and they do some work for us here. Everyone gets paid minimum wage for the work they do. They do create products that we then sell to help sustain the program, but we also do a lot of work out in the community. We help them to find internships and volunteer jobs out in the community, and we provide job coaching for them and the transportation to do that while they're here in our program during our hours here. And we do also a lot of stuff out in the community. We call it community-based instruction, where we're doing, you know, we do cooking here, so we'll go out and do the grocery shopping with them, and we do lunch bunches and lots of other things where we're out in the community. So we do have, you know, up to 30 people in our program, but if you stop by at any given day, it won't feel like there's 30 people in the program because everyone's out in the community doing things. So that's the program. What we've been doing during COVID is that we have, luckily all of our folks live within a certain mile radius of us. And so we have been able to provide work for them and drop deliveries off to their homes where they're living. So, you know, they create products here, like we do hand-rolled beeswax candles for Hanukkah and Shabbat. And we have some contracts with some local bakeries where we like fold up their bakery boxes for them. And we have contracts with a plastics company where we do work for them here in house. So we're able to bring that stuff to their homes, leave it on their doorstep, and they are able to complete the work at home. And then the next week we come and pick it up and drop off a new box. So one, which I'm proud of, is that they've all still been able to earn their paychecks during this time. So nobody's income has been affected by this, so that we're proud of. And two, you know, we've been able to engage them and keep them busy and give them work to do at home so that they haven't been bored and they've been having meaningful things to do at home. So on top of that, we've been, you know, up on Zoom and any sort of small groups that we would normally do during our day here at Celebration Company. We've been able to transition those groups to Zoom, so they are having contact with the staff and with each other at minimum 2 to 3 times a week. On Fridays, we get together for an Oneg Shabbat with each other and invite a rabbi or a cantor from the community to lead us in the Shabbat ceremony. And so we've been able to do all of those things. But of course, the number one question is when are we able to come back to work? Because there's nothing like being able to be with your friends and be in an environment and atmosphere that you're used to, and where you're, because it's not just work, right? It's a social place for them. It's a place where they are with their friends. We thought about doing a phased reentry so that it is very controlled and very thought out and very much not stuck to a calendar. But what's good about the phases is that what happens in the phases are set, but the phases can be when those phases happen can be changed. And then you can move back and forth between the phases. So if we've gone to phase two and then we need to move back to phase one, we can. Or if we need to stay in phase two for a longer period of time because we're not ready to move to phase three, we can. So that's kind of how we thought about it when creating the phases. So I'm going to, Lisa, did you have a question?
Yeah, I had a question.
Yeah.
It was a good way. You're going to share your screen and show us what you mean by the phases now,
yes,
right?
I was going to attempt to.
And Deb had a question. I guess you can answer it now or later. It's in the chat. I can't even.
Yep.
Okay, you'll answer it afterwards.
No, I'll answer it now.
How are your services funded and are you able to bill for the virtual programming?
So we are funded three ways, through grants and donations. Our employees do pay a program fee to us, and then through our sales and our retail. Give me just one minute. I forgot to close my office door, and I'm hearing some chatter. Give me one sec. I'm sorry.
Okay. She'll be right back.
Sorry. All right. We are having them pay. So typically, we think of our day, they're here for 6 hours a day. And so typically we think about, that they are working for us, creating the products that we sell in our retail space, for about 3 hours of that day. So if they come 5 days a week, they're getting paid for 15 hours of work, so that's 3 hours a day that they're getting paid for. So then the other 3 hours is what they're paying us for, and that's the stuff that we're helping them to reach their goals, their vocational goals or life skills goals. Those are the job coaching. That's the stuff that they're paying us for. So that's how we kind of look at it. So right now, during COVID, we've only been charging them for 1 day a week. And that's before all of the virtual programming and all of the workbox delivery that we've been doing to help kind of cover my staff, because we'd be able to pay all of my staff also as well. So to cover all of my staff fees. But we have taken, I actually just did a report on this, almost $70,000 of lost revenue since the start of COVID. And that's on the program side. The plus side is on our retail side, on the products that we've been selling, because people are wanting to support us and people are bored and shopping online, is that our retail revenue has actually either sustained or increased compared to these months last year. So we've actually have done well that way. So since they've been able to continue to work from home and we've been able to promote that they're making masks, like these and other things from home, we can promote that on our website and through social media, and people are wanting to support us. And so that has been nice. Any other questions? Angela?
Wait, Sue, did you have a question?
Oh, Angela did, and then I'll go to Sue. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said you pay your staff or the employees minimum wage, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So to distinguish, we call the participants employees because they are paid by JFS and sign the same hiring paperwork that I sign, but we call ourselves staff because we have to distinguish.
Okay. Between. So how much your employees make minimum wage?
So I think the Texas state minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, I think.
Does your staff make minimum wage?
No, our staff makes more. They are professionals, LCSWs almost.
I mean, I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, there is a difference. Yeah, yeah. Sue, did you have a question?
I was just wondering how many employees you have. How many participants in your program?
Currently, well, the start of COVID, we have 25, but currently we have 24. My program, because of our physical space, we can only handle 30. We are a small program, relatively speaking to a lot of other programs, but it's specifically made that way. We like to be very individualized and be able to be very person-centered and keep ourselves small that way. So, but 24, on average, it's about 28 on average that we serve, but currently it's 24.
Got it. When you said 70,000 lost in revenue since COVID started, that was our March.
That was your March. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been hard. Yeah. Any other questions before I tempt technology, Stacey?
So they're making, your employees are making masks and other things. Since COVID, have you changed product, and who are you getting it to, and how's the revenue part of that now that there's not so many people out and about?
Well, we have a website, we have an online store, and so you can order online and we can ship it to you, or we do have our staff who are coming in. Everyone is has a one day a week that they're assigned to come into the building and do their deliveries to their employees of their boxes. And so that way, if we have anyone who has bought something who lives in the area, we can also deliver locally too without charge.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Steve?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I'm gonna attempt to share my screen.
Got it?
I think so. Sorry.
Just press the green button on the bottom.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just making sure I'm sharing the right thing.
Oh, that would be helpful.
Yes. No, not the right thing.
Hello, sorry. That's us.
Yep, sorry. Hold on, let me make sure I have it open. Okay, let's try it again. Okay. Sorry, guys.
No worries.
All right. There we go. You guys can see that now?
Yep.
Did it right. Okay. So, as I said, this plan is it's not based on dates, and the phases can be shortened or lengthened, and it's very fluid. And this was just specific to the program, and it didn't include our retail side. So phase one is currently what we are doing with the staff coming into the office one day a week. And then all of the employees were working from home. Staff will deliver the work boxes to their assigned employees once a week. Staff will call or Zoom or FaceTime with employees at a minimum of once a week to check in. Like I said, any of the groups that we were doing in-house were then taking place on Zoom, and we were doing the Friday Shabbat Zoom get-togethers. We also do a weekly chair aerobics on Facebook as well. So phase two, which we had originally thought would be happening soon, is not, because as I mentioned at the beginning to some people that jumped on, we actually are having a spike in cases here in Houston, a 7-day spike in our ICU. So we have postponed these dates. We're looking now tentatively looking at June 29th. So to just get just my staff to come back in and to reset the building for the employees to return, to become comfortable with the guidelines themselves, to work out any kinks in the schedule. And it would be a staggered schedule for them to come in, so we wouldn't have... I have a staff of 7, so not all of them, and we have shared office spaces, so not everyone would be here every day, and they would still work from home on the days that they weren't here, and then we would still be doing our workbox delivery on the days that they were not in the office. And that we have that scheduled for us doing that for 2 weeks for the staff to feel comfortable and be ready for the employees to return, which then would be phase three. So being that we currently have 24 employees, it was easy enough for us to divide that each employee would come back just one day a week. And we would pre-assign what day a week that would be. We would not offer any transportation. Our program used to or currently does offer transportation to and from our program, but at this point, we don't see how we could do that safely. No community-based instruction. We would have to, the employees, of course, would have to practice social distancing, and everyone would have to wear a mask. Which, to talk about that for a minute, we do serve a diverse population with that have a lot of sensory needs, and we talked about that there might be some who have issues about wearing a mask, and what would we do if some of our folks didn't feel comfortable or weren't able to wear a mask because of their sensory needs. And I think we landed on, if those folks were unable to come to wear a mask, that we would ask if they were able to get tested on a more regular basis for COVID and show us their negative COVID test. And or we would have to make sure that when they are in the building that they were working in a separated, that they would have to be working in a separated area from other people, which kind of defeats the purpose of us being back together. So we're still kind of working out that kink, which was just recently brought up to our attention. So if anyone has any input or thought about that, I'd love to hear. If anyone's come across that issue in their re-entry, I'd love to hear about that.
Has anyone? Should we stop here and wait and see?
So this is Becca in Greater Metro West. It's actually part of our conversations in our camp communities, because our JCC day camps are talking about re-entry, and they have robust inclusion programs. And that conversation has come up about what happens if the kids can't wear the masks. And we have a vocational program. We've got young adults that are working in the program. And I think that based on our state guidelines, I'm not sure that they'll be able to attend camp.
If they can't wear masks.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly the employees are being required to wear masks. And so then those young adults that are employed in the vocational program would be excluded. And everybody's struggling with that because the culture of inclusion is so much a part of what we do. But we also have to be mindful of the health and safety of the rest of the community. And neither choice feels really good.
Yeah. So in Texas, there isn't that requirement. Actually, our camp, our JCC is starting up with a summer fun at the J program, and children are not required to wear masks. Only the adults are required to wear the masks.
So what about other communities? That's an interesting point. Yes. Sue, is your hand up? Yeah.
So in Boston and in Massachusetts, we are mandated to wear masks. If you're not
an adult,
distance for everybody. I don't know if there's a specific cutoff. But DDS, the Department of Developmental Services, who's our kind of our big state funder, they have not released guidelines yet. We should be getting some stuff hopefully in the next week or two, and then they anticipate starting to slowly reopen come July. But the information we've been getting, and assume it with our population as well, that some people won't be able to, or that will drool through it and essentially will never be able to have a functioning mask. So the way that the provider community here has been looking at it is almost what are the accommodations that we can make if we have some people who are not going to be wearing a mask. Obviously, all staff need to wear a mask. In addition to the distancing, we need to very, very carefully group those people who won't be wearing masks either with other people who aren't going to be wearing masks, that they all are making that decision in coming back to program, or with other lowest risk group people as well. But that is a big question for DDS and for the provider, saying, yes, we know there are some people who won't wear a mask, but we also have many participants and their families who don't want their son or daughters around somebody who's not going to wear a mask.
Yeah, that's a big problem. That's a dilemma. It's a catch 22.
Right. So, and even some people who aren't going to wear masks don't want their sons or daughters next to somebody who isn't going to wear a mask, even though it's kind of, so it's very much up in the air, but we're kind of getting to the granular level on it, I guess.
Have other people gotten past the granular level and made some decisions? I can say, as an individual who's wearing masks, I wear glasses, as you can see. I mean, I can barely see half the time. You go from somewhere that's warm into air conditioning, you're completely fogged up. It's, you know, it's difficult even for people that don't have, you know, so-called disabilities to wear masks. I mean, I'm just being honest. But do other people have thoughts about what Sue said? Have they made decisions?
Stacy has her hand up, I see.
It's interesting, and I'm wondering if different communities have this too. It feels like, and maybe this is what you guys are experiencing, it's so diverse in our state. So the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul, you have to wear masks, but the suburbs that touch it, you do not. I mean, it's like all over the board, and all 100% of our Jewish camps in the Twin Cities have been canceled. There is not any activities for kids. We had this great camp called Camp Butwin in St. Paul, for one of their programs was adults with disabilities, like one of the best programs I've seen. Everything is totally canceled. And the JCC, one of the JCCs canceled maybe 2 months ago, and another JCC day camp just canceled this week. So no programming for Jewish camps in our area. How about other areas?
Oh, wait, Deb was going to respond to the question, and then, you know, we can find out about that too. So, yeah, Deb, unmute yourself.
So I'm in Detroit, and Michigan has some pretty stringent requirements still. We're not at a place where we have reopened, but we're having these same discussions, and where we are at is we have created kind of a checklist of requirements for return in this kind of first phase. And our program is Medicaid funded. So we are working with supports coordinators to assess people's ability to adhere to those requirements, those health and safety requirements, in order to return. And that's really what we're basing it on. I mean, I personally am very concerned, not only that people are gonna have to stay home longer, but I'm concerned that if we don't apply the policy and the requirements across the board, that we really open ourselves up to a discrimination lawsuit, which I think could really happen in this situation, unfortunately, even though we all know we're trying to do our best. So
what do you mean by that, across the board? Am I not understanding you?
Any person who is returning to a program at JVS is going to have to fill out this assessment. So,
gotcha.
You know, in this first phase, and as we're talking about it today, we're thinking about, you know, in the first phase, what can our staff realistically handle, right? Because there's going to be a lot to work out, a lot of kinks to work out, a lot of things to figure out. And it's not to say that a month or 2 months or 3 months down the line, or 9 months down the line, who knows, you know, we might be able to support folks who are not able to wear a mask, are not able to socially distance, don't practice good hygiene. But in order to keep we have a social model program, in order to keep everybody safe, we really need to make sure that at this point, anybody who returns to program can adhere to the same requirements. That's where we're at.
So what about other people? Are they in the same, thinking the same thing, or have people gotten that far yet, Sarah? Yeah.
So we're in LA and we're pretty much still virtual. For our Javerim adult program, it's still virtual. Everything's kind of, I think we're entering phase two here, Jen? Phase one or two? One, I think. But there's not really any, like, we don't have a date for going back to our offices yet. It's going to be in a while, I think. So our programs are all as virtual as they can be with our agency. And then in terms of community programs, everything's kind of virtual. I've heard of a few camps that are maybe running, but the camps that we worked with in terms of our inclusion programming have all canceled. One of them is doing virtual camp for the first month, and then I think they're going to reevaluate. So LA is pretty much still kind of closed down, except for last week we had a lot of protests, but now they're back to being closed down.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Jen, or that's that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do have our food pantry. We've talked about that before, doing social distancing pickups. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's interesting, thinking about virtual camps for this population. I don't know if others.
Very, very challenging.
Mm-hmm. I bet it is challenging.
Yeah.
So what's happening in Brooklyn, Laura? Anything? You have to unmute yourself. Yeah,
I did. Hi, guys. We are still closed. And I think our senior adults and disability programs, unfortunately, are going to be open last in New York because of the COVID situation. We provide remote and over the phone services and food services, food deliveries and in-person pickups. It's been very challenging. The demand is huge. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I cannot get food. I cannot get enough volunteers to deliver, to pack and to deliver on Friday.
Well, this whole new Repair the World initiative.
They're amazing. They were really helpful. And last month I had 80 volunteers working for me, while this month I have only 15 because people went to protests.
People went where?
To protests.
Oh, to protest, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was stuck with...
That's the thing about volunteers.
...with food for 700 people, which we had to pack by ourselves. Basically, we have 4 volunteers, 5, 7 staff members, and it was insane.
Right.
Laura?
Yeah.
I know that here in Detroit, our skill-building program for people with disabilities is looking for new places to do volunteer work so that we can get people back to that kind of skill building. And I just wonder if you had thought about, trying to reach out to vocational skill building programs that are looking for opportunities, because a lot of volunteer sites are still closed.
Oh, this is a great idea, actually. Yeah, I will reach out. I will talk to our disability director and I will reach out to. I actually didn't think about it at all because I'm so concentrating to provide services to our disabled seniors, and not to leave them cut off the world completely, because our deaf senior group, it's a disaster. Those people, I don't know, it's like we do whatever we can, but it's really, really tough for them because they're locked in their houses and they are completely like alone, isolated from the world.
Yeah, that's really tough. I'm going to call you. I'm going to text you, not text you, email you after this about this new initiative that Network is doing with Repair the World, where they're bringing in, they want to hire, I don't know, I'm going to say 100 volunteers across the nation, and they're in certain cities, and New York City, Brooklyn.
That's a great idea. So also, maybe, sorry.
That's it.
In New York, there's OHEL, the group homes and Women's League in Brooklyn, maybe they're good to partner with.
Yeah,
You're in Brooklyn, right, Laura?
Yes, I am in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So, Sippy, if you can put that in the chat, that would be great. And Laura can follow, that would be wonderful. So, I know we were talking, thank you, Jamie. Are you here still? I can't see you. But there you are, hi. I know we were talking about your reentry. I don't know if you wanted to continue. If people have other comments on this, what people are planning to do in their summer programs, how it's been, because your group was, we haven't met in 3 months, I think. It's been a while since we've met, and I think we met before people stopped going into their offices. So we really haven't seen each other in quite some time, and our whole world and the way we work has changed, you know, 180 degrees. So, anyone want to talk about anything else? We want to move on to this phase three.
Well, I just wanted to add, we are also talking about, you know, as we break into smaller groups and have people come back one day a week, it was going to be, it's the same group of people assigned to a day, so that way, God forbid, someone does come up with symptoms or something like that, then you just have that one cohort that needs to then go into quarantine, and it hasn't affected the entire group, right? Because they've only interacted with four other people and that staff that was assigned to that day. So we were very trying to really try to keep the interactions down to a minimal. We're also thinking about having to create a liability waiver for anyone who does choose to come back, that they're basically saying that they're aware that as much as we're taking all of the precautions to, you know, upgrade, you know, our cleaning and our sanitizing and keeping social distancing and mask wearing and all that other stuff, that we can't prevent someone from catching COVID-19. And so therefore, here's a liability waiver. And then of course, there's like this health screening questionnaire and like taking temperatures and stuff like that on a daily basis when people get dropped off. So those are all things that would have to come into play that we thought of after that we created that phase, would have to go into when they start coming back. So
that liability waiver, have other people put that into place yet? Because that's a really good idea. And if you have, we want to see copies of it so that other people can potentially look at it for their own agencies. And whatever that little questionnaire is, that would be great. Lillian from Atlanta, were one of the first states to reopen. So what are you all up to?
Well, what we're doing right now is we're figuring out a plan on trying to get the day program to open up. But I think what's going to happen is that we're going to have one staff that's going to be going to the home and working with the same four clients, if it's either taking them out into the community or coming into the home and actually working with the client. We do have a waiver already in place for families as well as staff to sign, to follow the regs. It is a bit difficult because even though, you know, the shelter in place has been lifted, we still are following the shelter in place just because we're working with individuals that are vulnerable.
Right.
And there's a lot that comes into play with taking them back to the doctor's appointments, families that are wanting to come and see their individuals. So we're strategically really trying to put a plan in place. What we have put in place is family members, if they take their loved ones home, before bringing them back, they have to be tested. So that's one plan. The family as well as the individual. And then when the individual comes back into the home, we're kind of doing a 10-14 day shelter in place in the home just in case, to make sure that we're not affecting other individuals. So that's one. I'm sorry, my phone keeps going off.
So Lillian, you're talking about, you run a residential home.
Right,
Okay, so that's what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly, yeah. So the individual.
The waiver, I had a question. Is the waiver different for staff than for the clients themselves? Is it the same waiver?
the waiver, right. It's the same waiver for the staff, for all of the staff, and for the family members. And I'm going to get that out to you, by the way, Lisa, as well. And just making sure that everybody is wearing their mask, which is mandatory.
Uh-huh.
Wearing mask and wearing the gloves. That and is mandatory at all times. And we, too, are doing the different phases of people coming in. And if you don't have to be in the office, it's not mandatory, but we are breaking in phases, getting one or two people in on a weekly basis as well. Yeah. And as for the day program, we're still trying to work it out as far as how many people are going to be in that one space, because I think we have about 45 to 50 individuals in the day program. So I think getting the staff, again, having one staff assigned to four people at all times just kind of limits the amount of staff working with those individuals. Right. And I can't remember who had mentioned this, but we are concerned about individuals that cannot keep the face mask on all the time as well. That's something that's being worked out.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
I just had a question. For the, Lillian, for the people who you're providing the day programming in the home, were those, say there's four individuals living at that home, were those four individuals already a part of your day program? So it's easy funding wise. Got it.
Yes, yes. And we are able to fund virtually.
Okay, that's great. Deb wrote something. And I think it's very interesting. One of the things that took us a long time to think about was timing for arrivals, so that there weren't too many people coming through the door at the same time or waiting in the lobby as a large group without the ability to socially distance. So what did you do? What was your solution? Where are you? There you are.
we're still trying to figure it out, but you know, I think it's important, especially in all of these conversations that we're having, things come up that you just never thought about, right? Like a liability waiver. That's so smart. I never thought about that. I'm vigorously texting it out to our leadership team. We need one of those. So, you know, we, in all of our talking and everything, it took us a long time to think, oh, if everybody arrived, if, you know, whenever we get back to what we used to be, if all 150 people arrive in the same half hour, we can't do that anymore. Right. Yep. So, really thinking about staggering the day and what that looks like, and having people go straight to their work site or their community site, starting some programs at one time and then starting other programs later in the day, maybe adjusting our hours. I was on a call yesterday with people in our region, and they have extended their hours. So now they're working evenings and on the weekends so that they can accommodate all of them. Participants, but not all at the same time. So, you know, we have a pretty large program, and between 8:30 and 9:15 and 2:30 and 3:15 every day, we have about 150 to 175 people in and out of our building. So, you know, for us, that's not something that we can do anymore. So we really have to think about that. But even in our main lobby, you know, we took out most of our seats, signs all over. We're not going to buzz the door open if there's too many people in the, you know, you're gonna have to wait outside. It's just thinking about all these little things about people, lots of people.
Interesting. I wonder what schools are doing. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, I can maybe speak from the other end. It sounds like some folks have some kind of semblance of opening or getting back to some programming. Maybe you are doing that at a different level. You did. I can speak for my agency, JFCS Minneapolis. We are 100% working all of our programs out of the office. We are all at capacity. We've switched over. I can speak for myself. I'm doing all virtual home visits and events, and we are not planning on coming back to the office in any capacity to the minimum of Labor Day. I mean, I think Minneapolis, I think we're moving a little bit, sounds more slowly, and, you know, than some other programs. So so far are able to, you know, fulfill our participants' needs just in more of a creative way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We look a lot like that in Columbus. Our office is open on scheduled hours, and certain teams come in during certain times. All client interaction is virtual. All client interaction is virtual. We're using Zoom, we're using Teams, we're using Google, FaceTime, anything that is some kind of venue to not be face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And our staff at this present moment has to schedule to, like, if we need to come into the office to get something or to, you know, for personal business, that time is scheduled. But we're really trying to be in Columbus, really trying to be intentional about what time we share together. And when we do, masks aren't even a question. Like, they're at the front door. You have to wear them to get in the building. Sanitizer. Like, it's, we're really, really trying to be an example for distancing and sanitation and how to access people virtually. It's kind of been something we've been doing in Columbus for a while. Mm-hmm. And now it's really what we're doing all for the most part.
And did you find it, sorry, seamless, or was it, Liliana, you want to talk, did you find it seamless? Was it difficult to do with your population? You know, did it take some getting used to with your clients? Angela?
Yes and no. Yes, of course. It's seamless because in the sense that we had been practicing it, but technology rears its ugly head. And yeah. We have people who have never been on Zoom call. We have therapists who've never used Zoom, right, who are now doing all telemedicine.
Right.
We have clients who don't have laptops.
Right.
We've had to figure that out in a nanosecond. So,
right.
So no, it's not seamless, but right. Is it best practice? Is it what we're doing? And we don't have a choice.
Right.
We just have to make it happen.
So I wanted to say one thing to everyone. Last time we were on this call, you had suggested that we get masks that people could see people's faces, right? That you could see people's faces through the masks. Anyway, so Ruben has been working on that. We haven't gotten anything yet, but we're trying to get something. So don't give up the ship. Just stay tuned, okay?
We'll keep you posted. I have a couple of connections for that I've shared with our local agencies. I'm happy to forward them to you.
Fabulous. Thank you. Forward it to my email address because I actually have to leave this call, and I'm going to make Jamie the... host. I'm glad I said that because I have to go to another call at 4.
I'm still the host. You're good. You don't need to redo it.
Oh, you're done? Okay.
No, I'm still on. Yeah.
So it was really good to see everyone and, you know, keep on keeping on and fighting the good fight. You guys are doing great work. You're all heroes. Okay.
You're doing great work.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. Goodbye.